Hey, welcome to Behind the Knife, the surgery podcast. I'm Jason.
I'm Kevin.
I'm John.
And I'm Scott.
And we have a great show for you today. Let us know what's on the OR schedule for the day.
All right, welcome back to Behind the Knife. We're here at the Academic Surgical Congress Day 2, and we have a special podcast for you this morning with Dr. Justin Dimmick giving his AAS presidential address titled The Rookie Advantage. Stay tuned later today where we have our Day 2 highlights and talk with some of the prominent staff around the AAS. Enjoy.
And with that introduction, ladies and gentlemen, I present to you your president, Dr. Justin Dimmick.
Oh my goodness. Thank you, Caprice. I will say, for those of you who will ever have that done to you, it's much more fun to watch it done to somebody else. You're very resourceful, Caprice. So there you have it, Caprice. That was wonderful, and I appreciate that very much, having you be the one that introduced me here, since, as you said, we've grown up together. Here's a picture of us in Perth last year on a merry-go-round. I will tell you, this picture got me in some trouble with my kids because when they saw it, they said, "Daddy, we thought you were going on these trips to work." And here we are, not exactly working. The other wonderful thing about Caprice, this is another picture from that same trip. This is a younger fellow's dinner at the Royal Australasian College of Surgeons dinner. You recognize many august leaders here. But the nice thing about Caprice is you don't need a 360 evaluation with Caprice because she's always letting you know where your weaknesses are. Of course, I didn't see this one until quite a bit later. But just to note, you see Tim Pollock down there in the corner with the glasses. You see Deborah Wright, I think, in there somewhere. Yes, over there with the white hair. She's our august visitor from the Royal Australasian College of Surgeons, the Surgical Research Society of Australasia. There she is in a wig. And probably some other people you know there. So I would take some time today and reflect on our society and our society's role specifically, but also talk about what I think is its role in American surgery and what I think is a unique and a growing role for an association like the AAS that supports and nurtures young surgeons and young surgical academics. Now, the title of my talk is The Rookie Advantage, but I want to start by saying that I in no way mean to diminish the role of tradition, experience, and the hierarchy that does exist in surgery, because it is absolutely essential. As I said when we were honoring our editors of JSR, we stand on the shoulders of those who come before us, and that's why we're able to do the things that we're able to do. That being said, we always need to balance that with flexibility, innovation, and new ideas. Another way to think about that is there are veteran advantages, and we know these, but there are also some unique rookie advantages, and we'll see which ones win next week. So the AAS, the Association for Academic Surgery, for me, it's an organization that I love. And I love this organization because it embodies all of the things that I love, and that is professionally. Surgery is a calling, and I know you are all called to be surgeons. Science, I love science. The act of discovery in all of its forms, I'm passionate about. But most importantly, people. As Caprice mentioned, I grew up in a very small town, and really small. Like, she didn't show any pictures, but it's like the picture you saw with the little idyllic one house, that's about the size of my town. And you learn to really appreciate community. You heard my dad was a banker. He was very much in the George Bailey mode. He considers himself a community servant as a banker, not as a Wall Street banker. He was all about the community and promoting the community. And so I grew up in that kind of setting. And when you think about community and surgery and science coming together professionally, I found that type of community here in the Association for Academic Surgery. And I very much appreciate kind of finding my home here. And I hope you all do as well. The AAS is an organization that I believe is incredibly on mission. As Caprice also mentioned, I like to be strategic, and that means achieving your vision. And I think the AAS has done that because of the tremendous leadership that we've had over the years. Our mission is inspiring and developing young academic surgeons, and I think we've thrived to achieve these values of inclusion, leadership, innovation, scholarship, and mentorship, and I hope you see the roots of those come through this talk. Another thing I want to mention is that this is the 50th year since the AAS was founded. We're going to formally celebrate the 50th meeting, the 50th anniversary of our meeting next year under Caprice's presidency, but this is the 50th year the organization was founded. They kind of met for a year and then had a meeting the next year. George Zeidema was the founding president of the Association for Academic Surgery, and it's a great honor for me that I hold the Zeidema professorship currently. John Birkmeyer, our founder's lecturer, which I think is quite appropriate, was the first George Zeidema professor at the University of Michigan. So I think showing the lineage of Dr. Zeidema. Now, when I received the professorship, usually they have an event at the hospital to honor that person. Dr. Zeidema is approaching 90 years old and wasn't going to be up for a big ceremony. So I actually went out there last summer in June with my wife and children and had lunch with George and his wife in Holland, Michigan. And I got an opportunity to talk to him about a lot of things. He has a unique perspective, having taken over as chair of surgery at Johns Hopkins to follow Blaylock, a great figure in American history. And I asked him about the founding, and he said, we thought there ought to be a place where young surgeons could present their work and support each other. And from his written work, he goes further to say that our capacity of our society to focus and absorb youth into the association permitted the organization to benefit from youth's capacity for vigor, courage, and enthusiasm. And what a great message. And I think now that we play an even larger role than that. And that is that the AAS serves as a platform to harness the talents of our youngest investigators in what can traditionally be a hierarchical culture. I think this can often be an underappreciated source of value. And I think our organization is taking a larger leadership role and is positioned to do so because we are now the largest academic surgical organization in the world. And we have really embraced diversity in, I think, all of its forms, in people and in science. And that is a tremendously powerful force. Just as one example, how many of you know Heather Logge? Raise your hand. I see a lot of hands going up. How many of you heard about this I Look Like a Surgeon movement in social media? Even more. Well, that was started by Heather, who's a surgical resident. And she saw the I Look Like an Engineer campaign, and it was originally sought to talk about, to combat gender bias in engineering. And she introduced it into surgery, and it just took off like wildfire. People from around the world have entered into this dialogue, and this has now passed over 192 million people's social media platforms. And when I talked to Heather, she's here attending our meeting, which I think is a great honor for us that we attract people that are out there starting movements like this. When I asked her about this, she said it's not about gender, and it's not about ethnic and racial diversity only. She said it's about coming to work whole. And so I asked her, you know, what do you mean by that? And she said it means that we don't have to edit out those things about ourselves that we normally do to fit some stereotype at work. And to me, that's just a tremendous, powerful call for diversity and appreciation of diversity. And I wanted to recognize Heather for her contribution to that. But I think we've also been much more diverse in terms of the academics that we've embraced. I think John alluded to this in his talk. When I first came here, it was mostly basic science. I was kind of presenting in a session with a bunch of basic science. Over time, we've added clinical outcomes and clinical science to that, education. And now, if you look at the scope of diversity in the academic portfolio here, it's all of those things, plus things like social media, leadership, health systems, global surgery, health policy. Pretty much anything that any of our members wants to study rigorously, we will embrace that and give you a platform and a voice. One of my favorite examples of that, Amalia Cochran, who is the Vice Chair of Education at Utah and social media editor for JAMA Surgery. She's now also the president of the Association of Women Surgeons. Amalia is a very prominent blogger, and she studies disruptive surgeon behavior scientifically. Now, 20 years ago, if she had gone to her chair and said, I think I want to make my academic focus studying disruptive physician behavior using ethnographic methods, she very well may have gotten an instrument thrown at her. I think this diversity is also represented from the books that the AAS puts out. These are a whole series of books in health services, basic science, education, global surgery, leadership that Herb and Lillian as series editors have been promoting and distributing, and I think these are a great resource for our younger surgeons. So the AAS is growing rapidly, has a vibrant culture, I feel, and has even an international reach. We conduct career development courses for young surgeons across the world in all continents except Antarctica, and I heard Tim Pollock is working on that as we speak. And Dan Anaya deserves credit for overseeing that effort. But I want to ask us, why is it important now, more than ever, to give young surgeons a voice? Because I believe it is. This isn't the reason. This was just a funny slide that I found. Because as I said, I don't believe that. But I think it has to do with the environment that we're in right now. We're in a very uncertain and volatile environment. Think about the information. We talk about this in clinical information, but we know that the total information out there doubles about every 18 months. And that goes for scientific information. Innovation cycles are becoming shorter. And so you think about how these factors start to combine. We know that innovations are, because of technology, that the pace is quickening. And the rate at which knowledge becomes obsolete is therefore decaying quickly. There's a 30% decay per year in high-tech industries. Sorry, Herb. So for anyone, all the millennials in the room, this is a cassette tape. And in the 80s, when you liked somebody, you would put love songs on a cassette tape and you'd give it to them at school. So I ask you, with those facts, if knowledge doubles every 18 months and decays 30% per year, how long does being an expert last in the modern era? This is just an old photo of Charlie Yeo and Keith Lillimo analyzing the first results from their Whipple database. Sorry, Keith. So why is it so important now to embrace young surgeons? I think it's because learning agility, I think, has very clearly become more valuable than experience. You need to constantly learn. So I want to talk about a book. Whenever I put up a book, I always get weary because one time when I read Jim Collins' Good to Great, I love reading leadership books. One of my really witty friends, John McGee, for those of you who know him, I sent out an email and said all the things that I like about the book and all the lessons I learned, and he responded immediately, "Think what a great leader you'll be when you've read two books." Well, this is the second book, so I'm gonna tell you about it. So this book was given to me by Janet Dombrowski, who's an executive coach that Caprice and I work with on one of our coaching grants, who also has taught here at the SUS mid-career course for the last two cycles. And Janet is a wonderful coach. For those of you who are friends with professional coaches, you can find that they sometimes give you tough feedback constantly. So she's gives me a lot of very illustrative personal feedback. One time I asked her, "Janet, is it always this painful you can give feedback to your clients?" And she goes, "No, if you want the feedback that doesn't hurt, you have to pay me." So Janet gave me this book, and this book talks about the behavioral phenotypes under which rookies can perform extraordinarily well. Now we know if you veterans almost always outperform rookies, but there are certain ways in which they can outperform or perform extraordinarily well. And she studied this through a survey of young, high-performing individuals at organizations in the business world. And I think it has very real application to surgery. So these are the phenotypes, and I want to go through them. I'm going to give you some examples from people within the AAS or broader, more broadly, that I find are quite inspiring because they've achieved a high level of success by personifying one of these phenotypes. So I think the status quo is often leaders can be just caretakers. Once they've gotten success, they maintain the status quo. And this is kind of a typical, many of these things are typical leadership principles. But rookies, if they succeed, can be like backpackers. They come in, they're unencumbered with what has come before them. They're not weighed down by previous practices, and they invent new ways of doing things. And I think that's very clearly a rookie strategy. My favorite example of this is Carl. We heard yesterday about the first trial. Now, when he put up his timeline of when they met and when they randomized hospitals and when they had outcome, I mean, how many of you were blown away by how quickly he moved with that? Carl was clearly unencumbered by the knowledge that it was impossible to get these organizations to move that quickly. I find that fascinating. So, the ultimate rookie. Some leaders often act as local guides. They're experts, they stay close to what they know, and they dole out advice. Now, rookies don't have any advice to dole out because we sometimes don't know very much. So what they do is they act like hunter-gatherers. And this is a really powerful phenotype. This is saying, I don't know the answer, but I'm going to tap into and find people who do, and I'm going to put that out there. I'm going to synthesize that knowledge and put that out there. That is a powerful rookie phenotype. My favorite example of that is a medical student that I met on Twitter. Karan Chhabra, many of you know him. He's applying and he's matching in surgery in a month or so. So for all the program directors out there, it's a subtle plug. So Karan worked at advisory board, which is a health policy think tank or company before he went to medical school and has a pretty good knowledge of health policy. But he has created such a network of advisors that most of the leading health policy thinkers in the country know him. And he came to me with this idea to write a piece about how to optimize care within consolidated networks of hospitals. And he brought a lot of knowledge to that and wrote a very sophisticated policy piece that we published together in JAMA last year. And you know, this may seem like I'm bragging that I did this, but for those of you who read this, you know that this is way smarter than anything I could have come up with, and this is all Karan. But an ultimate hunter-gatherer. So some leaders act like marathoners. They've done it before, they know they're running the pacing, they know where they need to go. But rookies can be like firewalkers. They're not sure where they're going. They haven't been there before. So they're very nimble and quick. They take these small calculated steps and leads them to success. Now my favorite example of that is Caprice. Caprice has pioneered this area of surgical coaching, and she has been working on this and passionate about this from her very first years as a health services researcher. And there was no path here. This was a brand new idea, bringing the concept of coaching to healthcare. And she had many small wins and she moves forward, but she needs to be nimble and quick and responds to all this feedback to continue to move forward. And she's just now hitting her stride, I think, with multiple NIH grants and kind of obviously taking a leadership in this position nationally. And everyone's kind of clamoring for her expertise. But she firewalked her way there. Some leaders act like settlers. They know where they've been. They've established themselves. They're in their comfort zone. And they kind of follow a concrete path. But rookies are like pioneers. They push boundaries. And for them, this is survival. They act like that. That's the phenotype. They act like this is survival. This is life or death. And to kind of come full circle here, I'm going to use John as an example here. John, you know, when Caprice and I were coming out in health services research, we struggled because people weren't necessarily interested in supporting people who did that. We found people who did, and we moved forward. But John really was kind of all alone in that. And it blew my mind to find out that the paper that I read in surgery, Outcomes Research in Surgeons, that prompted me to call him, he wrote when he was 36 years old. And that landmark work that he showed on hospital volume that his mom doesn't think much of, I guess, but the rest of us do. He was 39 when he wrote that, and then he was in the Institute of Medicine at 41. So ultimately, you know, he had a lot of early success, but he worked really hard. He worked really hard at this because it was life or death. He was out on a branch there. So those are the behavioral phenotypes by which rookies can be successful. Now I want to step back for a second and say, well, so I'm just going to go out and I'm going to be not listen. I'm going to be unencumbered. I'm going to be a firewalker. I'm going to do all those things. Unfortunately, we're all still measured by traditional metrics, so it's really important that rookies, as you come out here, you need to interface with the veterans and prove to them your value. And you have to have a value proposition. So if you're pushing forward in a new area, and Amalia is an example of this, she wants to study disruptive physician behavior, so she's out there, she plants a flag, she's publishing in peer-reviewed journals, she's giving great lectures on that topic, you need to get out there. If you're starting an innovative clinical program that needs to draw revenue, it has to be strategic, has to fit into the strategic plan of your department or your network. Or if you, you know, extramural funding, obviously, is, you can get funding for fairly innovative thing for topics. I think of Carla Pugh here, who's worked with sensor-based education, has been, you know, is revolutionizing our field and has an R1 to back it up. So you can be innovative and get funding. For the leaders out there, you know, chairs, health system leaders, how do you engage? How do you pull out this rookie talent? Because this may be a very an untapped source of organization. Well, you need to build a culture that both balances the respecting tradition and engaging progress. One example of this from the corporate world, which Liz Weissman talks about in her book that I showed earlier, is Nike's New Crew. This started completely by happenstance, where there was a senior vice president who was organizing a corporate retreat for Nike, and she didn't really have any great ideas to put together one part of it around the future. So she started asking a few young people in the company, and they were so good, she gave that part to them. And then they did such a good job with that. She said, why don't you guys just run the whole retreat? And it was the best retreat they ever had. So they systematized that. They added it back into their department, and these folks are called Nike's New Crew. Each corporate division has them, and they are an organizational structure that helps harness all that rookie energy and talent and brings it in. McKinsey, the healthcare consulting company, has a similar thing. They call it reverse mentoring. But I think this begs the question, if you look inside your organization, you may find talent there you didn't know you had. And I think that goes for the House of American Surgery. We need to look to our young folks and support them, because there may be talent there that we're overlooking because we sometimes get stuck in a hierarchy that can be too traditional. And one example of this that I want to give is my own chair, Dr. Mulholland, who is not here because his son is having his first child. He did a wonderful job at engaging rookies. He takes calculated risks by engaging younger faculty and running the department, and uses leadership developments explicitly as auditions to see how people can add value. And we formalized this through a leadership development program that we have run in our department. And I'll just give you one example. He added 3 rookie associate chairs, myself for faculty development, Sandra Wong for clinical affairs, and Rebecca Minter for education. When we took these roles, we were in our late 30s, and we sat around the table with the other associate chairs and section heads, and it was a really, I thought, a fun experience to get different perspectives. And, you know, Sandra has gone on to be a chair of a department, Rebecca has gone on to be a vice chair of a very large department. So, you know, it was successful for 2 out of the 3 people. The AAS, I think, can serve this role for American Surgery. We have a platform that harnesses and showcases the talents and voices of our youngest surgeons. And as I said, I think that is something we need to tap into. When you look at these behavioral phenotypes and you see what they capture, it means being unencumbered, it means finding expertise and harnessing it and bringing it together. It means being nimble and quick and hungry and restless. And I think those characterize our organization. The reason why the AAS has had such success in this is we've had tremendous leadership. These are the leaders that I have served under in my time in the Executive Council. You know most of them. Each of them has taught me something. Herb is the ultimate mentor. Kevin has the highest integrity, always does the right thing. Dan is creative and is always finding new ways to do things. Scott. He's the ultimate gentleman and a wonderful leader. Melina is a visionary. She's always coming up with new ideas. Lillian brought the feeling of family to the association. She considers all of the organization her family and treats us like that. And Tim just typifies absolute excellence, doing everything to the highest level. And they bring these values and have led this organization to what I think is a great position. Our current officers, I want to thank Caprice, Becky, Adele, and Eric, each also bringing something unique to our leadership and may move on into high leadership positions over the next few years. So I think the future is bright. And then our organization as a whole, our executive council and members, committee members, you are the organization. We're here to serve you. And I'm continually inspired by all of the wonderful rookie ideas that bubble up and cross our desk as officers. My own mentees, these are the ones that I think are, I'm currently mentoring. I don't mean to leave anybody out. My junior faculty, K awardees, research fellows, medical students that I've worked with, also serious rookie power. And I think one thing that we all understand is that we enjoy working with you as much as you may benefit from us, because you are a constant source of renewal and energy for us. You already saw this picture. Caprice showed unusual industry in tracking down photos. So I also want to thank my family for coming. My wife, as Anastasia, is amazing. She is an amazing doctor in her own right. She's such a good doctor, community physician in Ann Arbor, that one of my senior faculty joked that if I was ever recruited away from Michigan, the Ann Arbor Chamber of Commerce would participate in my retention package to keep her there. In Ann Arbor, if you say Dr. Dimmick, they all assume you're talking about her. But she's been a tremendous source of support and love, and is the captain of our family, really. So thank you, Anastasia, for being here. Mary and Paul. Paul, you're still coloring. But these are my children. As Caprice said, every decision I make is to try and balance all the work I love to do with you with these two children that I love very much. So my challenge to you all as rookies is to capitalize on your rookie advantages. Try and figure out a way to translate them into traditional metrics so you can make contributions to your department, into our society, into American surgery. For those of you who don't consider yourself rookies anymore, help someone capitalize on theirs. And I pledge to you, as the outgoing president of the Association for Academic Surgery, that our organization is positioned to help both of you do that. So that's all I have, and thank you.